Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
What is verse number?
Tado pasanghritya girat sahasranir vimukta sangam mana adi purushe krishne lasat pita parte chatur bhuje. Purak stite milita drit vyadharayat. Tadopa samhritya girak sahasranir. Vimukta sangam mana adi purushe. Krishne lasat pita parte chatur bhuje. Purak stite milita drig vyadarayat. Tada. At that time, upasamhritya, withdrawing, giraha, speech, sahasranir, bhishmadeva, who was expert in thousands of sciences and arts. Vimukta Sangam, completely freed from everything else. Manaha, mind. Adi Purushe, unto the original personality of Godhead. Krishne, unto Krishna, lasat pita parte, decorated with yellow garments, chatur bhuje, unto the four-handed original Narayana, pura, just before, stite, standing, amilita, widespread, drik, vision, vyadarayat, fixed. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereupon that man who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings and who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men, stopped speaking, and, being completely freed from all bondage, withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide-open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who stood before him, four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the momentous hour of leaving his material body, Bhishma Dev sat, set the glorious example concerning the important function of the human form of life. The subject matter which attracts the dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. Therefore, if one is absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, he is sure to go back to Godhead without any doubt. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, verses 5 through 15. And here are the verses. And whoever, at the time of death, quits his body remembering me, alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me, and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without a doubt. He who meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, Arjuna, is sure to reach me. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest, who is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable, and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and being transcendental is beyond this material nature. One who at the time of death fixes his life air between the eyebrows and in full devotion engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Persons learned in the Vedas who utter Omkara and who are great sages in the renounced order enter into Brahman. Desiring such perfection, one practices celibacy. I shall not now explain to you this process by which you may attain salvation. The yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagements, closing all the doors of the senses, and fixing the mind upon the heart and the life air at the top of the head. One establishes himself in yoga. After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, if one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. For one who remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. After attaining me, the great souls, who are yogis in devotion, never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. Sri Bhishma Deva attained the perfection of quitting his body at will, and was fortunate enough to have Lord Krishna, the object of his attention, personally present at the time of death. He therefore fixed his open eyes upon him. He wanted to see Krishna for a long time, out of his spontaneous love for him. Because he was a pure devotee, he had very little to do with the detailed performance of yogic principles. Simple bhakti yoga is enough to bring about perfection. Therefore, the ardent desire of Bhishma Deva was to see the person of Lord Krishna, the most lovable object, and by the grace of the Lord, Sri Bhishma Deva had this opportunity at the last stage of his breathing. Tadopa samhritya girak sahasra nir vimukta sangam mana adi purushe trishne lasatpita parte chaturbuje purakstite milita drig vyadara yat. This is the most glorious of deaths, and some people die in seclusion, but Bhishma Deva is dying very publicly. His beloved Pandavas and Krishna are there before him, and so are many great sages. They've come to witness his death. All auspicious. for most people, death is not very auspicious because they're not prepared for it. And it's a terrible experience. It's an unwanted experience. People are confused and terrified at death. They don't know what will happen to them or whether they will continue to exist at all. So without proper preparation, death is terrible, terrifying. But for someone like Bhishma Dev, it's all auspicious. Nothing but good. And another common misconception is that when someone's about to die, you should fill him up with pain-killing drugs so he doesn't experience any pain. And that's a good death, a painless death. Of course, no. The person has earned suffering. If he doesn't get it now, then right after the moment of death, the Yamadutas will take him and he'll get the full dose, full measure of the suffering that is coming to him. And all you've done with your analgesics is postpone that for a few minutes. You may cover the symptoms of the terror of death by putting someone into an intoxicated stupor and paralyzing him so that he can't express his agony. But for the materialist, death is agony. But Bhishma Deva, he's suffering so much physical pain and discomfort. But for him, it's nothing. It's nothing bad. He's a great Kshatriya. He can tolerate all this and still speak with a clear mind, the essence of dharmic instructions. And, as Prabhupada, quoting from the 8th chapter of the Gita, makes it clearly understood in the purport, the real perfection of death is not the pain you suffer or don't suffer. It's not being surrounded by your loved ones. It's not putting on a good show that will be recorded for posterity. And you'll say something very clever at the time of death and it will be remembered. No, the perfection of death is to remember Krishna at that moment. And the practice of devotional service is preparation for that. It's the adequate and best preparation. By practicing devotional service throughout one's life, one will naturally remember Krishna at the time of death. Because you will if you develop a taste for remembering Krishna, at least what is called ruchi, a taste for the process, even if you don't become fully attracted to Krishna the person. We cannot become fully attracted to Krishna as a person as long as we're still attracted to the false personalities of the material world. You cannot maintaining both puts a restriction on your, or makes it very difficult to be attracted to Krishna. Trying to be attracted to Krishna and also to others who have nothing to do with Krishna. Or even devotees, but you're attracted to the devotees for the wrong reasons, for material reasons. Yeah. A family member may be a devotee, but you're attracted to that person as a family member, not as a devotee. Therefore, Kunti Devi prayed to be relieved of such attachments. Atta Vishvesha, Vishvatman, Vishwamurti Swakeshu me. Sneha Pashami Dam Chindhi Dvidham Pandushu Vishnishu. She's asking Krishna to take away her attachment to the Pandus and Vishnis. The Pandus and Vishnis are great Vaishnavas. If we think about them, that's practically as good as thinking about Krishna. But she, judging herself severely, is thinking herself a materialist. And therefore she thinks that her attachment to her family members is material. And therefore she's asking Krishna to destroy that attachment. Actually, it's not the case. Actually, her attachment is purely spiritual, but she's thinking herself out of humility to be a materialist. if we are infected with materialism still to some extent, that is causing obstruction to our becoming actually attracted to Krishna. There's nothing lacking in the descriptions of Krishna's glories or in his holy names. By hearing those glories and chanting those names, we should very quickly become attracted to him. Ka uttama shloka gunanu vahadat puman virajyeta vina pashuknat. Who can fail to be attracted to uttama shloka guna anuvada? Even you don't see the qualities in person. You don't have the vision. Even you can see the deity, but you don't. You just think him a statue. You don't see the personal qualities. Or even you were there 5,000 years ago and you saw Krishna, but you didn't realize what he was. You didn't see his qualities, even face to face. But we have another chance, anuvada. We missed out. Maybe we weren't there 5,000 years ago in Vrajadham and in the places where Krishna was. Maybe we were in some foreign land or some other universe 5,000 years ago. Or maybe in an animal body where we wouldn't be able to appreciate anyway. Actually, the animals and the plants in Vraja, they're very attracted to Krishna. But if we were something, somebody, somewhere else, we probably didn't get the opportunity to get Krishna, to see Krishna. Maybe we did, maybe we didn't. But we have the opportunity now to hear about him. Anuvada. We weren't there to hear Krishna speak to Arjuna. We weren't among the men on the battlefield. Maybe someone here was on the Battle of Kurukshetra. 5,000 years ago. I don't think we would remember it anyway. Probably not. So we didn't hear the Bhagavad Gita being spoken directly. And I don't know how that worked. Everyone was there while Krishna and Arjuna spoke, but there was no sound system. And I don't know how the last soldiers, back of the army, could have heard anything, or even the ones near the front. But anyway, they were present. We missed out on the opportunity, probably, of directly hearing the Lord's instructions. But we can hear about him and from him indirectly through it's being recorded, repeated and recorded by Vyasadeva and other sages. We have the Bhagavatam. We have the Bhagavad Gita. And we can hear from the Gita and the Bhagavatam the Anuvad. Uttama shloka guna anuvad. Repeated hearing. Playback. It's recorded. It was put on a MP3 and we can listen to it. This is the transcendental MP3, the original iPod, where it's all been recorded and we can listen to it anytime in the future or now. That's anuvada. So what person would fail to be very almost immediately attracted upon hearing these repetitions, repeated narrations of the glories of Krishna, Uttama Shloka? He would have to be a Pashugna not to be attracted. Pashugna literally means an animal killer. But we know that those who eat meat are equally culpable with the person who actually kills the animal. Those who sell the meat, those who transport the meat, and those who eat it all get the same sinful reaction. That is, I don't know, maybe Manusmriti says that. But Pashugna has other meanings too. The one Pashu also means the conditioned soul. So the one who throws the soul into entrapment by preaching Mayavad philosophy or encouraging gross sinful materialism, he's also Pashugna. And the person who kills himself commits spiritual suicide by various means, by Mayavad, accepting Mayavad philosophy, by taking intoxication. This is Atmaha, Pashugna. So those people, they can't be expected to be attracted. So maybe we've given up eating meat for so many years, or maybe some of us never ate meat in our life. Maybe some of us never took intoxication. I don't know. If I asked for a show of hands, I don't know if I'd get any. Anyone never took intoxication of any form. But somehow we're still being blocked from being immediately attracted to Krishna. Here we are chanting so many years, and we have to do it out of duty because we're not feeling the taste. We don't have a strong taste for the process. We have to do it by rules and regulations, force ourselves to do it. And we're, what to speak of Ruchi, we don't have the real attraction to Krishna, the person. Something is blocking us. Maybe we're not murderers, or maybe we never committed suicide. Maybe we never committed sinful activities, but somehow, something subtle or gross is obstructing our progress. That has to be removed. The purpose of the process is to become attracted to Krishna, attracted to the process itself, and then attracted to Krishna. And at becoming attracted to Krishna, perfection is guaranteed. And the 64 angas of devotional service, especially the five most important ones, are effective means for awakening that creeper of attraction in the heart. Bhava janmane, sadhana bhakti is meant for awakening love for Krishna in the heart. We have to identify the things that are obstructing our progress and remove them. We have to set our goal and do whatever is necessary to reach that goal. Bhishma Dev has done that. Someone else, another soldier on the battlefield, on the point of death, may not have a clear understanding of where he wants to go in the next life. What is, okay, now is the end of your life. Now it all adds up. And what do you want to make of your life now that it's over? What is it you want? What will you think of at the time of death? So many, they may be great heroes, and they're fighting, ready to accept death, but they're not ready to deal with death. They don't know what the real goal of their existence is. They accept death because it's the duty of a kshatriya, but they don't take advantage of death because they don't know the ultimate purpose of their life. So Bhishma Dev is glorious because he, first of all, knows exactly what he wants. There's no doubt in his mind what to do now that death is approaching. He has the opportunity that Krishna happens to be in front of him, so he focuses all his attention on Krishna and will be about to offer his final prayers to Krishna, his final glorification, and leave his body in that frame of mind. He knows exactly what is the purpose to be achieved when the end of your life comes and everything is summed up, and he knows how to achieve that goal. Through thorough education and training, he's been spending his whole life. He did so many other things. He fought and he took vows and he counseled the king. He did so many things and instructed so many and took care of the Pandavas. He had so many duties. But along with all that, he was practicing sadhana bhakti very, very sincerely. And therefore, at the end, he knew what needs to be done and how to do it. It comes from lifelong practice, being able to do the right thing at the time of death, which can come at any time. We never know when, most of us. We don't know when we're going to die. But by constant practice and refraining from unnecessary material attachments as much as possible, we're preparing ourselves for this final moment. Samshayam mahabaho mano dug nigraham chalam abhyasena tu kondeya vairagyena cha grihyate. Yes, Arjuna, as you say, the mind is very fickle and difficult to control. But it can gradually be brought under complete control and turned toward Krishna by regular practice and by refraining from unnecessary material attachments, vairagya. What that is, what is appropriate renunciation, varies from person to person. Basically, we should be giving up our attachments step by step gradually. So whatever level of detachment you're at, you should be progressing to a higher level. It cannot be artificially pushed beyond your capacity, but according to your capacity, you should be gradually giving up your material attachments. And that assures the success of the sadhana bhakti process. And then at the time of death, we can do the right thing and achieve perfection. These verses are quoted from the 8th chapter of the Gita. Antakale cha mam eva smaran chaktva kalevaram yak prayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra samshayaha. First of all, this is the summing of the perfection. If you can simply remember Krishna at the time of leaving your body, then you will immediately assume your perfect spiritual identity and go to Krishna. If you're ready to do that, if you're sure that you will do that at the time of death, you don't need to practice anything. Just continue in that consciousness and be ready for the time of death. But if you're thinking something else at the time of death, and you're not sure that you won't be thinking of something else, then you have to take safeguards. You have to prepare yourself by practice of regulated devotional service. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chajat ante kalevaram tam tam eva iti konteya sadatad bhava bhavita. It makes a difference. Whatever you're thinking of at that final moment, you will attain that nature. If you're thinking of the opposite sex, you'll probably take birth in the opposite sex and be entangled in sex and, connection. Or whatever you're thinking of, your family, your reputation, your bank balance, your house, you'll take birth as a cockroach in that house if you're so attached to the house. So you have to be careful not to be practicing so that at the time of death we won't be thinking of something else. The practice is try not to do it now. Try to focus our attention on Krishna and Krishna's service and Krishna's devotees. And think of them in appropriate ways and push out all the inappropriate thoughts as much as possible. Tasmad sarveshu kaleshu mama nusmana yujata mayarpita mano buddhir mame vaishatya samshaya. So you should practice, Arjuna. It's not time for your death yet. I'm just telling you about it in advance. You're not going to die in this battle. You're going to live on for a while. But you should practice. You should always think of me all the time. And at the same time, go ahead and do your duty. You fight. You have to fight, Arjuna. No avoiding it. That's your duty. So do your duty, but also remember me as much as possible. And then, dedicating your mind and intelligence and your activities to me, there's no doubt that you'll come to me eventually. Anyway, that's Krishna's instructions. That's the whole process. We just have to try to take full advantage of it and follow it. Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? Yes. She's not a concern.
Hare Krishna. Hi. What does the attachment to the process mean and how it's connected with nishtha?
Nishtha comes first. Nishtha is firm determination. Even though I don't have much of a taste, I'm determined to persevere and do everything right and avoid everything wrong because I'm convinced that I will get that taste. So nishtha comes first. That is firm resolution in devotional service. Then one can develop actual attraction to the process. You haven't met Krishna yet in person, but you're just very attracted to the practices of serving him, of hearing his names, taking his prasadam, associating with his devotees, serving the guru who is his pure devotee, you become attracted to these activities. That's ruchi. That comes before becoming attracted, introduced to Krishna in person, and becoming actually attracted to his personal qualities. You have to become very pure before rati, actual attraction to Krishna, develops. So first you become attracted to the process. You get a taste for the process. You enjoy it. You don't want to do anything else. You don't want to do anything else. Not that you're forced to practice devotional service. No one can stop you from doing it. So that's ruchi, attraction to the process. Okay. You don't have to force yourself to chant 16 rounds. You have a hard time stopping at 16. You just want to keep on chanting. You just want to. That leads to actual attraction to Krishna at the next step. Okay. Yes?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. I have a question about Tithi. We saw in Brajmandal Parikrama, last few days, means at end of Brajmandal Parikrama, they're doing Bhishma Panchak Vrat, 5 days. You heard about that?
I heard of it, but I don't know exactly what it is. It involves eating cow products, including cow, gopher and urine. But why and what it stands for, what was the original occasion? What were these 5 days? I don't know. Nobody knows? Do you know?
Sorry, Prabhu, that's why I'm asking.
Okay, we can try to find out, but I'm not sure. You know? Of Bhishma Dev.
Yeah.
And the Bhishma Panchaka is in Kartik.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not sure what it is. We can try to find out.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a severe vrata. If you want to do it, it's, it's not easy. Yes, sir. Oh, another question there. Yes.
Sorry. I have more 2-3 questions. Another is that you toured for Anuvad, Puman Viraj Jinnah Pashugna. In that, you gave example maybe we are there when fight is going on, means in battlefield. But I heard who died there, they all get liberation that time. Means
not everybody who died on the battlefield. Everyone who died seeing Krishna at the time of death. They were shot by Arjuna's arrows with Krishna standing right behind Arjuna. So they saw Krishna. Those Yamiha Nirikshaha Tahagatar Surupam. Those who here saw Krishna at the time of death, they got their Surupas. Otherwise, a soldier who dies in a right cause on the battlefield goes to Swargaloka and enjoys with the Apsaras.
Okay. And another about Bhishma Pitamaha. I heard he's one demigod like Vasu. He's between, because from when he took birth, he had many brothers, younger, elder brothers. Shantanu Maharaj is, Ganga mother,
yes,
throwing them in Ganga River to get liberated, but he alone left at last.
Yes.
And I heard about his previous life also. He did some wrong thing. That's why he got this, he is sleeping on arrow bed.
Yes.
So how can we understand, he's a pure, I know he's between this 12 Mahajan.
Well, I'm not sure in his case what his situation is. But you can judge yourself. There are two possibilities. Either he's just a demigod participating in Krishna's pastimes, in which case he wasn't perfect in his previous life. He became perfect now by sadhana, by remembering Krishna. Okay? Or the other alternative is that he's an eternal associate of Krishna, and that Vasu, the demigod, is only an expansion of the eternal transcendental Bhishma who lives in the spiritual world. He these transcendental personalities who live with Krishna in the spiritual world, they can expand themselves and take reflected forms on the heavenly planets or in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha, the Goloka Vasis can manifest themselves in different forms in Vaikuntha and also in the material world, usually on the Swargaloka. So if Bhishma is an eternal associate of Krishna, say in Vaikuntha, that means he was before, if he was before. He became one after, but whether he was one before and is eternally such, then that Vasu is just an expansion of him. He's more than that. But I don't know which is the case. Whether Bhishma became perfect in this life or whether he was eternally Krishna's associate. Maybe Prabhupada says about that. I don't know.
Okay, thanks, bro.
Okay, yes. Hi, bro. Who did you meet? Okay, Nityananda Prabhu.
How would you explain to a materialist our conclusion on the point which is argued about in society nowadays that, you know, it's better to actually kill a person who is suffering in big pain before death or an animal, you know, because like to, you know, they inject air in the vein and
well,
so on.
I was there when a pet cat was killed, and supposedly the doctor gave two injections. One was a paralyzer sedative, and the other was the poison that actually killed him. And we saw that the cat was struggling. You know, when his body, soul had to leave the body, it was painful, despite all the sedatives and paralysis. So it's not really relieving one of the pain. You know, we don't see the symptoms of the pain because the animal's paralyzed or the person's paralyzed. But when you're killed by, when you're forced out of your body by a lethal poisonous injection, it's painful. You may not show it to others because you've been sedated. Anyway, this is a question of the Dharma Shastra. Is that a right thing to do? Mercy killing? I'm not sure. Maybe in some cases it could be. But in a lot of cases, the principle is misapplied. Sometimes they even kill people, you know, or they put someone in the grave who's still alive. You know, they make such mistakes. So, yes, we shouldn't interfere with our karma. We're meant, a person who is actually advanced will accept what comes to him. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't take medical treatment. That's part of our karma. That we should just let ourselves be sick. Or let ourselves just suffer unnecessarily. So I don't think it's an absolute principle that you should never take painkillers. You should never, even at the time, you know, when you're near the near death and you're suffering pain, it's not that you have to tolerate the pain, that it's an absolute rule. It's just that an advanced soul would prefer to do that. That I'm suffering, and a very advanced devotee will know that this suffering is purifying me so I can go directly to Krishna. And if I avoid it, I won't go directly to Krishna. But you can't force that on someone. That's recommended for very advanced devotees, to tolerate all the pain and just die without any you know, remedy, without any amelioration of the pain, if you can. But if you can't, if you're weaker, then the sedatives are allowed. But I don't know about actually killing somebody. I don't know what the Dharma Shastras would say about that. Just like there's something called coup de grace. You know, someone is shot down on the battlefield and he's suffering great pain. He's going to die anyway, quickly. So he asks, please shoot me, please kill me. So that's considered chivalrous to go ahead and shoot him. But I don't know what the Vedas say about that. Yeah. Yes?
But now what they do in modern days is that they keep the person artificially alive.
Yeah, that's just the opposite. You don't let him die.
They keep him artificially alive and then, okay, they pull the plug.
Yeah, the keeping him alive is artificial anyway. So you just turn off the artificial life support system. That's just going back to the natural condition. What's the use of keeping someone alive for decades as a vegetable? They do it. They do it a lot. Especially if the person can pay, if the family can pay the bills, the hospital will be glad to keep them there. Someone occupying the bed and paying the bills. As a vegetable, it doesn't matter. Easier to take care of. Okay. I guess we'll stop here. Sarvagibhama. Yeah. Okay, but I think we have to stop after that. Okay, short question.
It was mentioned that Bhishma Deva was performing some kind of sadhana bhakti. Is there any descriptions of what he actually did?
Well, I don't know. Is it said that he became perfect by sadhana? I don't know. I don't know what Prabhupada says.
You mentioned.
No, I mentioned that I don't know, and maybe Prabhupada says, but I don't remember. Whether he was Nitya Siddha or Sadhana Siddha, I don't know. And then the second question, what was the sadhana? Well, remembering Krishna, being with him as a family member and getting the chance to think about him. There was Raghunuga sadhana. You know, he didn't have to practice anything by rituals or external practices. He had association with Krishna. So he was able to remember him constantly. That was his sadhana, if he had to practice any sadhana. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.